So Parshat Emor begins with Emor. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, Emor el Kohanim b'nei Aaron, v'marta lehem l'nefesh lo yitama be'amav. So here we have something which could be seen as an isolated law, that the Kohanim are instructed that they are not to become in contact with the dead. Over here it's not yet explained, but it will as we move on. L'nefesh lo yitama ba'amav. That means in terms of general population, they're not permitted to be in contact. Ki im l'she'aro hakarov elav, only to those who are closest to them. The question over here will be discussed is who is the she'aro. It is quite probable that the she'aro means the spouse. And therefore, if that's the spouse, then the continuation is to parents, children, daughter, and brothers. So I want to point something out, and what we're going to do today is looking at something. Well, there will be some specific points, but I want to look at some broader issues first. Instead of just looking at one particular law, can a Kohen become Tamei, there's something which is much broader, which is taking place, and in order to notice it. So over here, what we've been dealing with, I would say the whole of Book of Vayikra, if you want, you can argue half of the Book of Vayikra till this point. The topic of Vayikra is holiness. The topic of Vayikra is Kedusha. That's what it is about. That is, to my mind, a better way of labeling what the book is. It is a book of holiness. That is the overriding uniting theme of the entire book. And over here, what's really being said is that there are two sides of a coin. One side of the coin is Kedusha, is holiness, and the other side is L'chalel et HaKedusha. So now you just have to decide what word you want to use. L'chalel is to take the Kedusha and to empty it of its holiness. You want to de-holy it, you want to desecrate it. That would seem to be what is being referred to over here. Now just by letting your eyes wander a little bit, lo yitama bal b'amav l'heichalo. He cannot let himself become whole, to become something other than kadosh. In Pasuk Hey, there is a particular example or examples that are given. Lo yikrechu karcha b'rosham, upa'at ziknam lo yigalechu, ubivsaram lo yisrutu saratet. Rather, and I'll explain those in a second, rather, rather, what they should do is become Kodesh and not Chol. Although over here, the Chol is said in a very particular way. It's something which I think we're quite familiar with in terms of the labeling it. It's something which we'd call a Chilul Hashem. Right? Kedoshim Yu, they should be holy. No. Of course, all of this is something which we recognize from before. We just, last week, had Parshat Kedoshim. And everyone's told to become Kadosh. So therefore, the question over here would be, in a certain sense, what's the added emphasis? So then you would say that maybe it's somebody who has more Kedusha, therefore, to take away that Kedusha, become unholy, as it were, is considered to be worse. But over here again, Kedoshim Yud Lelohehem, V'lo Yichalalu Shem Elohehem. So therefore they should be holy to God, and not L'chalel Et Hashem. The word shame over here really is most interesting, and why we always refer to this as Chilul Hashem, rather than just L'chalel. I'm not sure what the next word should be. And it explains that the problem over here with the Chilul Hashem, ki et ishei Hashem lechem Eloheim he makrivim vayu kodesh. That over here we're talking about Kohanim, and Kohanim have an added level of Kedusha. They're the ones who bring the korbanot. They're the ones who eat truma. And therefore, for them to do something which will be a Chilul Hashem would be considered to be more spiritually devastating. Just to go back for a second to Pasuk Hey, the things that it mentioned are a korcha, right, on their heads, upa'at ziknam, which is interesting because this is the law of peyot, which go for everybody, so why there's the particular emphasis over here by Kohanim, ubivs, and the other thing about korcha is that it may have been mentioned already. Ubisaram lo yisretu soretet, and when it comes to their bodies, they should not do any kind of a scratching or a ripping of the flesh, which is not explained over here whatsoever. And for that matter, the last time it was mentioned, which was also to the entire people, was not explained. Pasuk Zayin, Isha Zona Vichalala. So now you notice again, the opposite of Kodesh is being mentioned. Isha Zona Vichalala Lo Yikachu. Again, it's this constant seesaw of it needs to be kedusha and it can't be chilul, and that keeps going back and forth. V'kidashto ki et lechem lekechu makriv kadosh yelach ki kadoshani Hashem mikadishchem uvat ish koin ki tachel lizno. Tachel over here again is from the word to make unholy, et aviyahi michalelet. And over here, again, this opposite of Kedusha. So what we have here is an introduction of the Kohanim themselves. And it's not the first time the Kohanim have been mentioned in Sefer Vayikra, but the emphasis over here would seem to be on this additional level of Kedusha, and therefore not to allow this to turn into a Chilul. Regarding the particular formulation of Chilul Hashem, or for that matter, Kiddush Hashem, and going back into the name specifically, so I'll just note that perhaps if you look, we'll look at source very quickly, sources 4 to 10, in Bereshit, Perek Yud Gimel, we have Avram Avinu coming back to the place that he once had built the Mizbeach, El Makom HaMizbeach Asher Asah Sham B'Yushanah V'Yikor Sham Avram B'Shem Hashem. The main emphasis is that it could have said Vayikra Vashem, though it's B'Shem Hashem. When Avram plants his Eshel, Vayita Eshel B'Vashah, Vayikra Sham B'Shem Hashem Kel Olam. So it's again, it's the Shem Hashem which is emphasized. When we are in the Ten Commandments and not to take God's name in vain, Source 6, Lo Tisa et Shem Hashem Lakecha L'Shav, Ki Lo Yinaka Hashem Et Asher Yisa Et Shmo L'Shav. So again, a constant coming back, returning to this idea of Shem Hashem. In Source 7, which is, we're getting a little bit closer, because this is in Achrimot, U'mizar Acha Lo Titein Lavir L'Molach, this is the child sacrifice, the service of Molach, V'lo Tichalel Et Shem Elokecha Ani Hashem, that the service of Molach would be considered to be a Chilul Hashem, followed in Perek Yutet, V'lo tishma'u bishmi l'shaker, v'chilalta et shem elokech ani Hashem, which again would perhaps echo from the Ten Commandments, but again, it's this Chilul Hashem which takes place when a person swears in God's name. Perek Kaf, Source 9, Source 9. And this is a repetition of Molach, both in Achrimot and in Kedoshim, and again, it refers to this as a Chilul Hashem. So all that I'm pointing out is that the phrase Chilul Hashem is something that we should be familiar with. It's not one isolated place. Continued in the next parak in Parshat Emor, which is Source 10. So now we're going further in Parak Kavbet. Vaydeber Hashem Moshe Lemor, Deber Laron Vel Banav, Yinazru Mikodshe Bnei Yisrael, Velo Yichalalu Et Shem Kodshi, Asher Hei Makdishim Li Ani Hashem. So I'll say it again. Those are the two sides of the coin. There is this Kiddush Hashem, which are the Kohanim are supposed to do, and don't do a Chilul Hashem. Skipping a little bit, and still in Source 10, Pasuk Tet, V'shamru et mishmarti v'lo yisu alav chet u'meitu bo, ki yichaleluhu ani Hashem mikadisham. And Pasuk Tet Vav, v'lo yichalelu et kodshe b'nei Yisrael, et asher urimu l'Hashem. And Pasuk Lamed Aleph, v'shmarti mitzvotai v'asitim otam ani Hashem, v'lo yichalelu et shem kodshi v'nikdashti b'toch b'nei Yisrael, ani Hashem mikadisham. And those wondering, by the way, this would seem to be the major source for Kiddush Hashem, as opposed to Chilul Hashem, because here it's outside of the connection with anything else specifically, and it can be seen as an independent statement, but it's really the conclusion of everything that we've seen till now. V'lo tichalalu et shem kachi, do not do a Chilul Hashem, v'nitkadashti b'toch b'nei Yisrael, ani Hashem mikadishchem, hamotzi etchem, yeretz Yisrael, liyot lachem, lokem ani Hashem. So, Everything on this page has been pointed just to one particular thing. And that is that we have two sides of a coin. The two sides of the coin are Kiddush Hashem and Chilul Hashem. And we're obligated to Kadesh at Shem Shemayim. How we're Kadesh at Shem Shemayim? So we have many, many opportunities. I know that there are more dramatic ways to be Mekadesh Shem Shemayim, and there are more dramatic ways perhaps to be Lechelel Shem Shemayim, but we've seen a whole bunch of sins which are called the Chilul Hashem, and we've seen a whole bunch of things where the consideration is not Lechelel Hashem or Lekadesh at Hashem, and that is, I'm going to say this again, once you realize this, what this emphasis has been, that's the theme which is running through this week's Parsha. It continued from last week's Parsha, although I will observe that the big difference between last week and this week would be last week, both in Achrimot and Kedoshim, we were talking to all of Klal Yisrael. Here there is an emphasis on the Kohanim. I'll say that as an observation, that's what's interesting. We've already been told a lot of these things regarding Klal Yisrael, and now we're told them by the Kohanim. We can then theorize that by the Kohanim, there's an additional level of Kedusha, and therefore by the Kohanim, there seems to be an additional concern. Now, in terms of Halakha, that's true. In terms of Halakha, there are things that the Kohen can't do. That's just the beginning of our Parsha. There's contact with the dead that he can't do. Yes, there are exceptions, but there's contact with the dead that he can't do. There are people that he can't marry. There are particular laws in terms of his offspring over here, the law in terms of the daughter. Although, if we'll be careful, we will notice that the same formula, not the same laws, but the same formula already existed in last week's Parsha, and that's what I want to look at. This is a question of form and not a question of content. The content is a little different, but the form seems to be quite similar. Starting with the Korcha, which we're not told why, the Pa'at Ziknam, Lo Yisratu Saratet, right? All that back in source number one in Pasuk Hay, all of those elements, leading through who he can marry, and then the emphasis on the daughter, we'll move over to source 11. Source 11 is, hopefully it should seem familiar to some of you. We read it last week. Lo takifu pa'at roshchem, v'lo tashchitit pa'at zakanecha. Right? We saw this last week, and now we're told, but the Kohen can't do it. Of course the Kohen can't do it. Why can't the Kohen do it? Because no, at least not males. And then, kovched, v'saret lenefesh lo titnu biv sarchem, Uktovid ka'aka lotitnu bochem ani Hashem. Al techalel et bitcha lahaznota, v'lot tizna'aretz m'la'aretz zima. Do you now notice what I said before, that the form is the same, even though the content we can argue about? It's the same formula. It's the beard, the hair, it's this idea of the seret over here, also a ka'aka, also a tattoo. It's the t'chalel et bitcha, the idea of the daughter, even though the laws are very different, but the formula seems to be the same. On Pasuk Lamed Aleph, Pasuk Lamed is interesting. Et sheptotai tishmor mikdoshai tirani Hashem, which is very interesting to throw into all of this, the mikdash, because the mikdash really is much more of a Kohen issue. And then it says, and this you would say is not connected, Al tifnu al avot va'al yidonim, al tivakshu l'tamar b'hem ani Hashem l'keichem, and don't turn to these divinations of the Ov and the Yidoni to try to figure out things about the dead. B'bnei seva tokum. But it's very interesting. If you're interested in wisdom, don't try to look to the dead. Just look for old people. I mean, I mean that very specifically. Is that that's where wisdom is? B'bnei seva tokum. So just in case you think that all of this is completely separated, source 12, which hopefully you recognize, V'yitim li kadoshim, ki kadosh ani Hashem. This is the very end of Parshat Kadoshim, which again the emphasis is on kadoshim, on holiness. And so again, it's twice. The Oven Yidoni. And what's the next Pasuk right after Pasuk Kav Zayin? I know some of you would say Pasuk Kav Chet. No, what's the next Pasuk? The next Pasuk is the beginning of Emor. So Emor begins with this, again, it's the Oven Yidoni are there as well as the introduction, even though the Oven Yidoni are in Perek Yutet as the conclusion. So that's what I'm saying. The form is a very similar form if you ignored the end of Kedosha, the beginning of Emor. There just seems to be a lot of repetition, even though, again, I'll admit that in one place the emphasis is on all of Klal Yisrael, that we all need to be holy, and over here in Emor the emphasis is on the Kohanim. So, going back, this is what we're going to try to do. We're first going to try to figure out what these laws mean over here in Kedoshim, and then we'll try to figure out on why they have an emphasis in Emor. So what exactly is this list? Which means in source 11, what is this list of peyot and not to destroy the peyot of the zakan and the seret for the nefesh and the tattoo, and for that matter, tichalel bitcha lahaznota. By the way, one seems to be a sexual law, if you'd like, you can call one a chok and you can call one something which makes a great deal of sense. But what exactly is this whole section? If you were to ask the Rambam this, it's very easy to ask him, because the Rambam, one of the great things that the Rambam did when he takes all the Taryag Mitzvot and he puts them in his Mishneh Torah, is that he puts them in terms of topics. So therefore, by putting categorization is interpretation. So therefore, I just need to take a look in which place the Rambam places these laws, and then it becomes quite clear. So where would the Rambam put a law like the ones we see over here? The answer is he puts them in the laws of Avodah Zarah, of idolatry. So as far as the Rambam is concerned, that all of these are expressions of idolatrous practices, and this is what pagans did, and this is what pagans do, and therefore the Torah is telling us not to do these things, which then actually becomes very interesting. We have then, again, because I want to keep on thinking about Kedoshim and Emor, we have then in Kedoshim telling all of Am Yisrael not to do what pagans do, and then when we get to our Kohanim, an emphasis, and certainly don't act the way that pagans act, because you're the ones who are representing us. So I'll say it again. We should not do what pagan priests do, and certainly our priests should not do what pagan priests do. So therefore, the emphasis is here because these are idolatrous practices which are inappropriate, obviously, for all of Klal Yisrael, but they therefore would be especially inappropriate for those who actually are our Kohanim, because they're the ones who are serving God. And again, we're at this point, the way that in our terminology, we will now be talking about this in terms of the Kiddush Hashem versus the Chilul Hashem. The Kiddush Hashem is to do this properly. And you noticed along the way a couple of times it says, no, of course the Kohen can't do this, because he is the Kohen. He's the one who's bringing the sacrifices. He's the one who's eating Lechem Hashem. He's the one who's doing things which are Kodesh, so of course he can't do this thing. The wisdom of the Rambam, by categorizing this in terms of pagan ritual practices, may help us understand the repetition, because it's true for Am Yisrael, and therefore certainly true for Kohanim, so that therefore would work. There's another element over here, which maybe is a little bit below the surface, but that will pick up when we start with Onkelos and then move over to Rashi. In source 13, Onkelos is commenting on the pasuk, so we'll read the pasuk and we'll read and see what he adds. The pasuk says, "V'seret lenefesh lo titnu b'v'sarchem." Onkelos writes, "V'chvol almit lo titun b'v'sarchem." So what did he add? For the dead. Almit. Rashi, "V'seret lenefesh ki kein darkam shel amoraim liot masritim b'v'sarchem ki shemet lehemet." This is an Amorite practice. When somebody dies, then they would tear their skin as some kind of a response to death or a memorial of death, which means we're dealing over here with some type of idolatry and the connection is death. And that's interesting, because again, as much as the Rambam saying is generally this is idolatrous, over here we've just now moved much, much more specific. And also then the flow from the seret to the body, moving on to not turning to the avota yidonim, becomes a little bit clearer, and the response instead, they say v'takum, which means we are this world existence. By the way, the other thing which is very interesting then is the insistence that our Kohanim can have no contact with the dead, as opposed to all the types of pagan voodoo, whatever it is, where there are seances and contact with the dead. So over here, there would seem to be this idea, do not try to investigate this other world, death his death, and the Kohanim cannot come in contact with the dead because of the holiness that they have. So as I just said, it's that this becomes a little bit more interesting. Rashi then explains the tattoo, Ktovet Ka'aka, Ktav HaMechoka V'Shakua She'enu Nemchak La'olam. Now, what Rashi did is he explained what it is. What Rashi did not explain is what the motivation is. Rashi says he's very technical over here. He's talking about exactly how you do a tattoo. That is not allowed. But there's no what I would call ta'amei ha-mitzvot. Again, if we went to the Rambam, if you want to guess in terms of the Rambam, where exactly the laws of tattoos are written. So once again, you'll find that this is within the general response towards idolatry or pagan practices. The Ibn Ezra in 15 writes, Ktovet ka'aka, yeshomim shudevek im viseret lenefesh, ki yesh mi sheyirsham gufo b'tzura yidura ba'esh al hamet v'yesh oda yom roshmim b'noreim b'fneim liot nikarim. That he says there are still people who do this, even on their faces they do tattoos, but over here the particular emphasis that was added by the Ibn Ezra is what? It's al hamet, is that he sees this also as some type of either as mourning or as some kind of contact with the dead. Is that and therefore, of course, what did he gain by this? Is that the Ibn Ezra understood the first part of the Pasuk was talking about the dead. And I do want to stress something. When you read the Pasuk by itself, without the information that we received from either Unkelus, Rashi, or the Ibn Ezra, when you read the Pasuk by itself, there was no mention of the dead. In the Pasuk itself, it says, Viseret Lenefesh. The beginning of a hint, Viseret Lenefesh lo titnu b'besarchem. Well, and the other thing you need to note is when it talks about the seret nefesh lotitnu bivsarchem uktovet kaka lotitnu bochem. What the difference is, the bivsarchem versus the bochem? That's something which is noted by the commentaries. But over here, this idea of a seret lenefesh is what surely got Onkelos to see the pshat is lemet, is that you're doing this for the memory of somebody who's passed away, and this is some kind of a practice which therefore becomes much closer thematically to the Tifnu Alavot V'Yedonim, that some kind of a desire not to let go of the person, to remember the person, as we'll see. The Rabbeinu Bechaye in Source 16, V'Dershu Chazal B'Torat Kohanim, Yachol Afilu K'tav V'lo Ka'aka Yechayev, Talmud Lomer Ka'aka, Yi Ka'aka Yachol Afilu Ka'aka V'lo K'tav, Talmud Lomer V'Katav, HaKetzad, Eino chayev ad sheyiktov v'yika'aka b'dyo o b'kchol uv'chol dover shu roshem. Rav Shimon ben Yochai omer, eino chayev ad sheyiktov shem Hashem, shenemar v'katavta v'ktovet ka'aka lo titnu b'chem ani Hashem. Klomer lo titnu b'chem shmi shu Hashem. Now Rabbeinu Bechaye over here was being very clever, explaining exactly what it is. He just now navigated through a huge machloket, including a machloket Rav Shimon Bar Yochai said, and he just said, this is what he said, and he brought proof from it, but let me back up a little bit. So I'm going to say something parenthetically now that you all have to, if you want to join our secret society, then you have to promise never to reveal, right? It's quite well known. Yes? We agreed? Yes? The Elders of Zion, if you want to join the Elders of Zion. It's quite well known that one of the worst things that any Jew can possibly do, especially today, is to get a tattoo. And I say especially today, I say especially today, you know, that's part of what the Nazis did to us. They numbered us and they, like cattle, and they forced people to get tattoos. But there is this Jewish urban legend that if a person has a tattoo, then they cannot be buried in a Jewish cemetery. Now, I call it a Jewish urban legend because, of course, there's no source for such a thing, but it's a great way to warn generations of Jews not to get tattoos. I mean, does anybody really believe that we don't bury people who were in Auschwitz? We do not let them in the Jewish cemeteries? Of course, you'll tell me right away, but there's a difference. The difference is they had no choice. But obviously the problem is not the tattoo per se. It comes under a different category. And the category is that, and this, by the way, is a law which is barely practiced today, and that is, in terms of the law of burials, that you're not supposed to bury a sinner in a Jewish cemetery. So now the question is, what type of sinners? So obviously you're dealing with really profound sinners. So let's just say, for example, that somebody converted out of Judaism, was baptized and so on, and then passed away. You're going to have a problem where you bury that person. The way they used to do this in the good olden days is that they would sometimes bury them right outside of the cemetery. So the thing with suicide would be a similar thing. Again, it's not suicide per se, even though that is more clearly the law, even though it's completely ignored today, and it has to do with understanding of mental illness. You'll say that this person didn't commit suicide. This person was in incredible pain. I mean, normal people don't kill themselves. People kill themselves only because they are under incredible duress, emotionally, psychologically, and the halacha understands that. By the way, I'm very tempted to say halacha understands that in ever since Freud, except Rabbi Akiva seems to have predated Freud by a little bit. There is a breita that says that once a kid cut school, okay, which is a fine thing to do, and his father found out about it and said, wait till he gets home. And the kid got the message, wait till he gets home. It says he went to the top of the building and he jumped off and he killed himself. And the Breita said, okay, so he committed suicide. That's it. He lost all privileges as being a religious Jew. He doesn't, right? Committed suicide. Suicide is murder. But instead of that, it says, a father should never speak this way. That was the conclusion of the Breita. That's what Rabbi Akiva says. A father shouldn't speak this way. The kid was so scared, he figured that killing himself was better, whatever his father was going to do to him. So Rabbi Akiva apparently has very good understanding of psychological pressures that this person was under. He said this is not considered to be a suicide in the sense that he would have lost privileges of being buried in a Jewish cemetery. This has become the normative approach in terms of 20th and 21st century poskim. Very rarely will you find somebody committed suicide who they're going to say, oh no, absolutely not, bury them outside a cemetery, because they'll say the person committed suicide because they were under some kind of duress. But yes, that's the same thing. So it's interesting that we've come to this point in terms of Jewish educators, they would never get up and say, because that would be considered very insensitive, they would never get up and say that, oh, this person committed suicide, we're going to bury him outside the cemetery. But they will say, if you get a tattoo, you'll be buried outside of a Jewish cemetery. But obviously, this is very good educational practices in trying to scare people. Although I will point out that at face value, which one is worse? Committing suicide is considered to be taking a life. Yes, it's your own. I understand, especially 21st century issues of personal autonomy, we believe that our lives are ours, right? Right? If it could be my baby, my body, my whatever, I can certainly say this is my life, my decision, I can do what I want, personal autonomy. But this just does not happen to be true in terms of Jewish law, where there's a much larger discussion. Do you own your body, do not own your body, and what things can you do to your body? So again, pushing that whole serious legal discussion aside, is that over here, a person who committed suicide broke one of the Ten Commandments, Lo Tirtzach. And I know you say, no, that's suicide. No, it's Lo Tirtzach. Do not take a life. You're not allowed to take a life. That's all. I mean, just because you have a term for it, right? Fratricide is okay, because I never said not. I don't know, is there a word for mother-in-law aside? Mother-in-law aside? What's that called? I don't know. That's euthanasia. So, my point is that if you can't take a life, you can't take a life. It's not that I own certain lives, that this is really my decision to make. But over here, so here's the part that I'm not supposed to reveal to anyone, but you're not allowed to get a tattoo, and this is so bad. So there's an argument in the Mishnah, and this is what Rabbeinu Bachai was touching over here. There's an argument in the Mishnah about what type of tattoo is not allowed. So is it a figure? Is it only if there are words? So Rav Shimon Bar Yochai actually says, you're only guilty if you write the name. Now he writes the name. The name, that's what he says. There's an argument in the Gemara, what does he mean? Did he mean that the name is the name of God? Or did he mean idolatry? Now, if I say, and therefore, according to one approach, Rav Acha and Bar Kapara, that according to Rav Acha, you're only guilty if you wrote Shem Hashem, and according to Bar Kapara, you're only guilty if you wrote the name of idolatry. So now, if we'll go back to the Rambam, this whole section is talking about idolatry. So one of the things you can't do about idolatry is you can't write or tattoo idolatry on your person. If that's the case, then the vast majority of, unless you, like, you worship your mother and you write mom, so that would, right? The vast majority of tattoos would not fit into the Torah prohibition, which means the vast majority of tattoos would only be prohibited on a rabbinic level. And I'll say that again, because that's the thing you never want to say out loud or never tell anybody, because we all know you can't even be buried in Jewish cemetery, but most of them would only be prohibited on a rabbinic level. But the argument would be, which is the thing which is not allowed? Is that you can't write God's name, or meaning, what's the Chilul Hashem? That's what's very interesting. Which is the Chilul Hashem? So what did Rabbeinu Bechaya just now tell us? So what did he do? He quotes Rav Shimon B'Yochai, who is quoted in the Mishnah, but then it's explained in the Gemara that there are two different ways to understand this, so he only took one approach, and he read it right back into the Pasuk. So again, how does Rabbeinu Bechaya read it back into the Pasuk? It says, Uktovet, now once it's Ktovet, it's Ktav, as far as he's concerned, Uktovet ka'aka lotnu b'chem ani Hashem. Which means Ani Hashem, he understood that the thing that you couldn't do was to write God's name. So therefore, according to Rav Shimon B'Yochai, again, with Lag B'Omer coming, and Rav Shimon B'Yochai being theoretically connected to Lag B'Omer, so we're teaching what Rav Shimon B'Yochai says here, the only prohibition of a tattoo, according to the Rashbi, would be to write God's name, and that's a Chilul Hashem. Of course, you have to ask why that's a Chilul Hashem, but that's a Chilul Hashem to write God's name on your person, keeping in mind there's this other opinion that Rav Shimon B'Yochai really said is that you can't write idolatry, because that's really a Chilul Hashem to write idolatry on you. We'll read it one more time, the last two lines of Rabbeinu B'Chai. Rav Shimon B'Yochai Omer, Einu Chayav Ad Shechtov Shem Hashem. He actually writes in the Mishnah, Et Hashem. The question is which shame it meant, but he's citing this at shame Hashem. Shenemar uktovet ka'aka lotenu b'chem ani Hashem. Klomer lotenu b'chem shmi shehu Hashem. So that comes out according to the way Rabbeinu Chai. But it's interesting just in terms of the mindset that, but isn't it true that culturally for Jews this is considered such a bad thing? And I can't even call it tattoos. It's like human graffiti. It's like most of the graffiti that we see putting on people, according to this, is a drabanan and not a deraita. Okay, certainly according to Rav Shimon B'Yochai. Question is, who's the halacha like, and so on. As I said, if we were dealing with halacha, there's a lot more to say. But it's interesting the way that Rabbeinu B'Chai is reading this right back into the pasuk. Different chevrot kedishot, if that's the plural, made up their laws, what you need to do or not to do to be buried in this cemetery. You know, we just spent the last couple of days in London. And one of the first times I went into one of these large synagogues in England, one of these big United synagogues, which has many, many nice Jews who pray there, but many of them, one of the great things in England is that they've succeeded in keeping membership of people who are not necessarily observant in these nice large shuls. And I remember one of the first times I asked, so why do they come to the shul? Or why are they members of the shul? Because they have huge, you have to be a member of the shul to be buried in a certain burial society. A chevra kedisha. Yes. A chevra kedisha has certain power to decide who we're going to bury. So are there certain chevra kedisha that have written that if you have a tattoo, you can't be buried in our cemetery? Absolutely. Why? That's the thing they decided to pick. The law actually is if a person is a sinner. So now you decide what a sinner is. You could say that if anybody, you can make your own chevra kedisha tomorrow. And you could decide, now you could pick your favorite sin. Whatever your favorite sin is, you can say, this is what I've decided is, we're not accepting people to be buried in the cemetery. But that there is a certain amount of, what's the word? Arbitrariness? The other thing which is interesting along the way of that whole discussion is, Rav Avad Yosef has a tshuva, are you allowed to bring flowers to a cemetery? So all Jews know, I mean, there's certain things that all Jews know. You know, you can't use flowers, you can't, mourners don't wear black, right, for example. But there's a problem, is that the Gemara says that mourners wear black, and the Gemara says that you bring flowers to a cemetery. And actually the reason is a very practical reason you don't want to hear, is that flowers smell good, and sometimes cemeteries didn't. And therefore they would bring flowers. So therefore, things that have no logical reason is chuko ta'akum. It's a chok. It's something they do for no logical reasons. Things that non-Jews do, but there's a logic to it, that's not considered to be chuko ta'akum. To be chuko ta'akum has to be something completely arbitrary with as no logic whatsoever that non-Jews do, and I imitate them, that's what's prohibited. There's a... I mean, the furthest example I've ever seen was a tshuva from Rav Menashe Klein, who wrote that Jews should not be eating Chinese food, because that's chukot ha'akum. It was Jewish eating Jewish food. What's Jewish food? I guess he's from Hungary, so only so Hungarian. I don't mean to be facetious, but it was somebody coming from, I would say, a very narrow world. I would assume that a Jew who grows up in China should be allowed to eat Chinese food. No, it's Jewish food. This is chukot ta'akum, and he had to admit it's not really chukot ta'akum, but it doesn't seem right. Jews, why do we have kosher Chinese restaurants? I mean, how many? In China, how many Jewish restaurants do they have? I mean, this isn't right. Okay, let's continue. I just gave you. Did I give you? Actually, I think it's a good idea. One should. Women should be limited to only how many pairs of shoes? Okay. Let's get. Yeah. Now the other really good example, which the Hasidim have to deal with, is the. I don't know. Have any of you ever worn Hasidic garb? Hasidic clothing. Okay. Have any of the women ever put on a men's shirt, or any men put on a women's shirt? What's the difference between the buttons? The buttons go the other way. Hasidic clothing is all women's clothing. The buttons go the wrong way. So all Hasidic clothing should not be allowed because it's beged isha. It's very hard to know, but I've seen explanations. No, it has to do with Kabbalistic. It's the right needs to be on the left, and not the left on the right, and therefore it's Chesed controls the din, and so on. But all Chesedic clothing is women's clothing. Okay, let me continue. How many things you have not to quote today for me? You're not going to listen. I know that. Okay, Sur 17, the Or HaChaim, and now we have to move quickly. Ready? Yes. The Or HaChaim in Sur 17, V'seret l'nefesh, Shemur l'nefesh, Lomer, Hagam she'seret chibul haguf hu, al pidat nefesh yikara. So again, he's focusing on that word nefesh, so no, it really did say that this is some kind of a mourning practice. We'll skip a little. Zetim tzasha amar, hakatuv achareze, v'ktobet ka'aka, lo tenu b'chem, v'lo mar b'vsar, chem lo mash lo b'vsar levad yigrom hapgam, elagam b'pnimiyot ha'adam, l'tzad she'enu ose mitzad tzar v'chom ha'kaev, sh'ner mabo, ena denatras al tzaro, v'omar ni Hashem itbara, opi ma'amar ha'elokia ha'rashbi. So he also quotes the Rashbi, but he quotes the Rashbi from the Zohar, which, as far as I could tell, is built off of the what we already had seen from the Mishnah. Ki tevat ani Hashem tagid al kisei kvodo yidbarach, asher anu korim shchinato yidbarach, v'shem havaya baruch hu melech yoshev al kisei amachut. V'remez b'zeh ki akpid Hashem al kvod shmo yidbarach, al kvod shchinato, ulderech zeh yitzav Hashem la'adam lebal yafkom gufo v'nishmato b'shnei ma'asim ha'roshmim shem seret l'nafsho v'ktovet ka'aka. That the soul itself, or the body, represents something which is holy. It represents the Shechina, it represents God, and therefore to do damage to the body, either by ripping the skin or by putting a tattoo, or both connected, are very similar. The Nitziv in Source 18, V'seret l'nefesh lo titnu, minago umo ta'olim lasot, hosefet tsar l'meit, svitot alabar shel adam chai, v'gam lasot zikaron ayidei ktovet kaka shem hamet. That was very interesting, because he says that this is done as a memorial. It's done to remember. Zikaron. The idea of the tattoo is in order to remember. He doesn't say that, but he says that that's the problem is the memory. He does say some things a little bit further on about the comparison between this and the kahuna, which is quite relevant to what we're talking about, but we are moving on to the top of the next page. And what he does is that he tries to explain the difference between the pshat in the psukim of the two places versus the chazal, and I'm just going to skip through this and move over to the Sforno. Sforno writes, Lo takifu, v'tziva shlo nechalelam bakafat rosham kemaseh shotim v'shikorim o komarim. Nice list that he has over here. Again, the Sforno spent some of his time in Rome. He has a soft spot for priests, and he says that you can't do this to your heirs the same way that his list included the imbeciles, drunks, and priests. They're the ones who get haircuts like this. V'lo b'gilu ha-zakan, k'amram hadrat panim zaken. V'lo b'seret l'nefesh, k'machshivim ma'od mitat ha-adam u'mitablim ma'od alav. V'chein b'ktuv ha-kaka, l'tet ot b'vsaro milvad ot ha-brit. So, yes. Finally. So, if you noticed what we just now read, between the Netziv and the Sforno, the Netziv referred to this as a zikaron, as a memory, while the Sforno referenced this as a brit. I'm going to explain to you what's going on, just so that we don't miss any of the references over here. We actually do these things. All these things we're told not to do, we actually do them. We actually do something worse than a seret to the goof, and we do something which is very similar to the tattoo. Remember, the tattoo is putting Shem Hashem on you. And what the two that we just now compared it to, in case you missed it, because they were a little hard to tell, the second one was easier. The Sforno was saying is that it's similar to the Brit Milah. The thing that we missed along the way was, we'll look at source number 20 and 21, and then we'll understand it. Banimatem l'Hashem l'keichem lo tutgo v'lo tosimu korcha bein einechem l'meit. So over here when it talks about the korcha, which was one of the things that we had from the very beginning this week, where can't you not put the korcha? Bein einechem. So what does bein einechem mean? So continue. Ki am kadoshata l'Hashem l'keichem. Right, because you're holy, which is exactly the point again. Source 21, V'samtim devarai eila alavavchem unavshechem, u'kshartim otam la'ot ayedchem, v'yilutot afot bein einechem. So if you now have begun to realize what's going on, is that we can't write tattoos, which shame Hashem, on our body, but what we can do, and at least I speak to half of the people in the room who may do this on a daily basis, and that is to put on tefillin. What is very clear in Sefer Dvarim, again, I don't know how clear this is to you yet, but it's very clear in Sefer Dvarim, is the Bein Einechem in those two places, that's Perek Yudalet and Perek Yudalev, actually, the one in Yudalet, don't do the Korcha Bein Einechem, after we were already told in Yudalet, V'ilototofot Bein Einechem, what do you put Bein Einechem? You do put the Tefillin, which of course is full of Shem Hashem. That's exactly the point. Going back to Tefillin, as it's mentioned, in an earlier source, the earliest source, which is back in Shmot Perek Yud Gimel, "Vigadat levincha biyamahu lemor bavur zeh asa Hashem li b'tzeit Mitzrayim v'yolacha la'ot al yadcha ulezikaron bein einecha," which means the same way that we saw before, that the reason that you can't do the kaka is that it's a zikaron, it's some kind of memory where you don't want to let go of the dead. Over here, we need to have a zikaron bein einecha, which is the tefillin, which is Shemot of God, Lamantia Torah Hashem Beficha, in order to always remember. That's exactly the point. It's a Zikaron. The next thing it goes on is the Bechor, the Kedushat Bechor, which itself is very interesting, because the Bechor, at this point, was supposed to be the Kohanim, which I don't want you to forget where we started today. We started with the addition of the Kohanim, but over here we find in one section the idea of tefillin together with Bechor, and it ends up, why? Because God says, I killed all the Bechor, the Chol Bechor Banai Efdeh, right? You have to redeem the Bechor, Vayola Ot Ayadcha Ulototafot Bein Einecha, which again, the Bein Einecha is being used over here to describe the tefillin. The one who picked this up on the spot, in Shmot at least, was the Shadal. The Shadal writes, and we have in 23, Vayola Chala Ot, he quotes some others, and he says, Ve'imay Devat Sarah Chizuk, Hainu Hayiti Mosif ki Yadanu ki Kena Yaminhaka Kadmonim, Vichenu Ate Yom Bortzotam Izrach, Liot Al Gufam Simanim Lavodat Elohehim, Shrei Katov Viktavta Kaaka, Viktovat Kaaka Lo Titnu Bachem, Vichen Ad Hayom Hayishmaelim Kotvim Psukim Misefer Toratam Amazazot Pitchehem, Uvishare Arehem, I've no knowledge about that, Vieshomimka Yaminhaga Amim Akadmonim Lachtov Al Bsaram Vaamirut Viluchot, Shinosim Al Mitzcham Ktivot Al Kshafim Ukein Kmein. V'Hashem Matzad Arachik Et Yisrael Min HaMagim Ahem V'Tzivatan El Sa'it Al B'Saram K'tzat Medivrei Torato L'Mantia Torat Hashem V'Finu Tamid. So over here, he directly sees the idea of the tefillin as the counter to the tattoos and so on. They would write on their person the psukim and the names of God and all kinds of things. And what do we do instead? I mean, any Jew who has this temptation to get a tattoo, tell him just put on tefillin, right? That would seem to be exactly what he's saying, because he's saying it comes to fill a similar cultural expression. There's also the Shadalim 24, which is similar, which is local in Vayikra. Rabbi Natani Breslov in 25, Likute Halachot, bringing presumably from Rabbi Nachman, which means this idea that it said Bnei Nechem in both is actually, the Gemara brings that connection. The Gemara notes that it says Bnei Nechem in both, and it learns the halachot of how you wear tefillin based upon the idea of korcha. Because when it says korcha Bnei Nechem, it doesn't mean over here, it actually means Bnei Nechem up over here, which is exactly the place that one is supposed to put the tefillin. So the Gemara connects them in terms of technically, to know where to put the tefillin, but then leaving the Gemara, he moves over to what he believes to be the essence, and he says, because the idea of the tefillin, the idea of doing a korcha, are the opposites. Ki tefillin heim lezikaron, kamo shenemar ulezikaron b'nei necha, v'kein heim b'bechinat chayim. It's the side of death, which is forgetting. And so on. Basically, he's saying is that death is something which should be forgotten. We should forget death forever. And the person who dies, that you do the korcha for the person who dies. He says ultimately, this is not what the real memory should be. The real memory should be for God. Now, I'm not going into the deeper, what could be theological or even psychological issues of this, of remembering the dead or not remembering the dead versus remembering God or not remembering God. But it's interesting how he sees these two as polar opposites. And it seems to be that, and again, I want to stress, is that some of the things that we've seen today take us towards specifically the name of God or Avodah Zarah, while others seem to be just this realm of death in a general way, although the Rambam's observation seems to be absolutely correct. And I'm repeating myself a little bit now by saying is that the linking of these things together seems to be things that have to do with the occult and death and so on, which was so much of the occult. On the other hand, the Kohanim cannot be in contact with the dead and cannot be involved in the cult and cannot be involved in death, and therefore it has to be the opposite and rather expressions of life. After all of this and everything I've said today, I just want to have one postscript, which really could have been the whole class today. I didn't have to do all of this, but now maybe it will be much clearer. What did we really see? What we really saw the emphasis today was on what? Was Kiddushat, but not just Kiddushat. There was another word. Kiddushat Hashem. And what can we not do? You can't do l'chalel et Hashem. We've learned along the way that that was much more specific than we ever imagined, and even the possibility that the idea of a tattoo is specifically would be a chilul Hashem. By writing God's name on your body itself, that would be a chilul Hashem. That's not the appropriate way. Rather, you take parchment, and you write it the proper way, you write tefillin, you write a mezuzah, a sefer Torah, and so on, and therefore that's the proper way of writing down something which has holiness to it. So after saying all this, I want to go back to this lingering question which I've raised numerous times, which once again will now have a very, very clear answer. What we noted is that there are two narratives in the book of Vayikra. One I spent, I don't know, it seems to be like the last 6 weeks talking about, and that was Nadav Avihu. So we'll place another view aside. There's one other narrative in the book of Vayikra, and that narrative is in this week's Parsha. What is that narrative? It's the narrative of the Mikalel. So why is the narrative of the Mikalel thrown over here in this particular point? So I think the answer should now be fairly obvious. We'll just take a look at source 26. Vayetze ben Isha Yisraelit v'hu ben Ish Mitzri b'toch b'nei Yisrael v'yizu machaneh, right? Vayikov ben Isha Yisraelit et Hashem. Vayikalel, which means instead of doing a Kiddush Hashem, what he does over here is he's Mechalel et Hashem. The result is, which means the same way that we saw along the way that a mitzorah or others are taken outside of the machaneh, now we learn that this mikalel, who is a machalel et Hashem. And again, it ends up, v'nokev shem Hashem mot yumat, which means this narrative or this story, had it been in the middle of Bamidbar, nobody would have noticed, nobody would have been upset. It would have been one after the other after the other. I mean, the one that they like to throw him next to is perhaps the Mikoshesh, right? So you have individual sinners who've done something wrong, so throw him next to the Mikoshesh, and again, nobody would be terribly upset. But now we realize, what have we been talking about last week, this week? The whole idea is this emphasis on Kiddush Hashem, and the whole idea has been trying to avoid Chilul Hashem. So here, and again, I'm insisting, Hashem in the most literal sense. So now we find somebody who's mikalel et Hashem, which is lechalel et Hashem. It becomes another expression of maybe even like somebody who puts the shame Hashem on them. This person is being mikalel, by being mikalel, he's being mikalel et Hashem, using the name of God in an appropriate way. So now perhaps we understand why the story of the mikalel is placed over here among all of these expressions, which we now should note has been this major emphasis moving on from Parshat Kedoshim all the way through over here. Again, if you want to nitpick with me, I probably would have had it a little bit easier if it were in Perikav Bet as opposed to Perikav Dalet, had it been before all of the holidays, which is Perikav Gimel, as opposed to coming in over here. So we still have to work a little bit harder to figure out why all the holidays are there in the middle. But this seems to be a very good illustration of what is considered to be another type of Chilul Hashem, other than all the Chilulim that we've seen all along over here, which really was the major emphasis all the way along. So it seems to be that you have the pagan practices that deal with death. And what's interesting is that this person is almost half pagan. That's also, he's this Ben Mitzri, he's this person coming from the outside, trying to enter inside. He has an opportunity to join the community, opportunity to be L'kadesh et Hashem. By the way, there was one phrase of the Shadal along the way, which I skipped, but I did find it somewhat, he found it amusing. He quotes the Ibn Ezra, so let me just say a couple things, that the Shadal back in 23 does note that when it comes to the Kohen Gadol, not only does the Kohen Gadol wear tefillin, he wears the tzitz, which means, and he has the Shem Hashem on him, which means that he has this Shem Hashemiyut, I don't know if that's English, this Shem Hashemiyut of the Kohen, or certainly the Kohen Gadol, is so much more profound. And there over here, there's so much more Kedusha. But again, I want to insist, what does it say up on the tzitz, which is the tefillin, right? Similar to, what does it say? Kodesh Hashem. That's the Kiddush Hashem. The Kohen Gadol is the ultimate Kiddush Hashem. Over here, somebody who, again, the Mechalel, somebody who's Mechalel Hashem. So it's interesting. The Shadal in 24, he writes in the end of the second line from the bottom, Umilo Yitzchak al Rav Avram ben Ezra, the Ibn Ezra, Shepiresha Achar Sha'asur Hasrita, Hizkir Sha'al Tisrot Hana'arabiv Sarah. He says, who cannot laugh? Because why does it go one after the other about the chalal? Just going back to the bat, because the bat was mentioned in both places, the bat having to do the daughter, l'chalelota. So along the way there, again we skipped this, but along the way there are those who pointed out that in pagan practices there was such a thing as a kadesha. And they believe that this was holiness. They believe that that sexual outrages were part of the services of idolatry. So over here in that same section it says no. If you do this right with one's daughter, then she becomes the chalel. That's a kedesha and not kedusha, and this is something which is not appropriate. So then the Shadal continues and says, he has to laugh at the Ibn Ezra. He says that there's some kind of a problem. He assumes that somebody does lisrot. So one of the things that we saw was that there was this fear when it talked about both the srita and the kaka, maybe a Jew, this is amusing, not like he thinks, but this is amusing, that somebody would maybe hire somebody else. You can't write it down, so you'll hire somebody else, and you'll put the tattoo that you want to put on somebody else. It says that people needed money, that they do it. And that's what's described by a number of the commentaries. So he says, but even by your daughter, maybe you want to put the sirita on your daughter, but if she does, what's the problem? So that's what he finds amusing. What's the problem? The problem is that then she would dress inappropriately. I just want to point out, but it never happens in our time that someone gets a tattoo and then has to dress inappropriate just so that everybody can see the tattoo. That has never happened. But it's interesting that that's what the Shadal is laughing at. You know, who would ever think of such a thing? So I guess there's a lot of people who have thought of such a thing.